Good morning. Welcome to WRUU LP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul. Also, the viewpoints in this following program are not necessarily those of WRUU, its license holder, or its staff. Also, any health advice given on this show, please consult a licensed medical practitioner. Okay, good morning, everyone. My name is Evie Williamson. This show today is The Art of Health and Wellness. This is my inaugural show. I'm going to give you a little brief overview of who I am. I'm proud to say this is the second chapter in my life. I'm originally from Illinois, born, raised, and educated, moved to Atlanta in 1995, right before the Olympics started. My professional background is in grassroots politics and organizational development support. I'm the proud mother of a set of adult twins, a boy and a girl. They're 30 years old. That's hard to believe. Author of a couple of books. And my passion is youth art and cultural enrichment. I have a background in museum curation, a lot of other fun stuff. But what I'm bringing to you today is The Art of Health and Wellness, the 8 health and wellness components. Those components consist of emotional, environmental, financial, intellectual, occupational, physical, social, and spiritual wellness. So hopefully everybody can gain a little bit. And we are lucky enough to have a guest with us today. Our guest today is Mr. Harold Oglesby. Mr. Oglesby is with Candler Hospital. He also is a healthcare professional. He's over the health and wellness department for Candler Hospital. And in addition to that, he's also president of the 100 Black Men of America Savannah chapter. All right. Good morning, Mr. Oglesby.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for being here. This is so exciting. And thank you so much for being here for my inaugural show. All right. It's greatly appreciated. So what we're going to do, we're just going to dig right in, Mr. Oglesby. If you can kind of give us a brief overview of who you are. I did a little bit, but I think you can do yourself more justice than I did.
No problem. I'll make one correction. I'm not over the health and wellness for Candler Hospital. My role at St. Joseph Candler is I'm the manager of pulmonary medicine at the Candler campus. And under pulmonary medicine falls our pulmonary diagnostics department, our sleep disorder department, as well as our respiratory care department.
Thank you for that correction.
No problem. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Armstrong State College back in the day. I've been working in the medical field since about 1989. I have an MBA in healthcare administration. Work with a fine group of people at the facility. I'm also the president of the 100 Black Men of Savannah, and I chair our health and wellness committee. We have several components that we are actively working on.
Okay. Thank you for that. So we're going to just dig right in. The first question I have for you, Mr. Oglesby, what is the overall sentiment towards health and wellness in this region versus the nation versus global health and wellness?
Yeah, I think Savannah reflects what you'll see nationwide, and it depends on whom you're talking to when you're talking about the look of the view of people when it comes to health care. If you're asking someone that has access to health care, they'll probably say it's pretty good in Savannah. You have nice facilities in Savannah. If you're a person that doesn't have good access to health care, you may say it's more of a challenge. Maybe more of a challenge for you getting to where the health care is provided. Maybe more of a challenge if you do not have health care insurance. There are options out there, but it may be more difficult. Things related to transport to getting to where the health care is available, getting off work to access that health care. So it depends on who you're talking to. It also depends on the person themselves. Some people are very focused on their health care. They're very focused on wellness, and they'll do those things that keep them healthy. Others may not because of several things that affect them and affect their way of living and thinking. So it depends on who you ask. But okay. I think we reflect what happens regionally and nationwide.
That's very good. And that's very exciting. Now, I am aware that there's an African American health division within Candler, and that's awesome. That's great. Unfortunately, we make up a lot of demographics of a lot of number ones that are not very good in our health. What are the demographic health differences in this region, if you can answer that?
Sure. When you're looking at the demographics, we again reflect what you'll see pretty much nationwide. That if you look at most disease processes, you'll find that African Americans tend to have poor outcomes. If you look at things like diabetes, hypertension, you'll see that African Americans are usually affected more than other people. And again, some of that is related to access to healthcare. Some of it is related to cultural differences. Sometimes there's mistrust of the healthcare community, particularly when it comes to research. You always can go back to the Tuskegee experiment and folks having some distrust, and some of that distrust is more than warranted. Nowadays, I think you have a better shot of having ethical treatments and ethical studies being done, but it's hard to get over some of that mistrust. I know that we worked with a program out of Morehouse College where we were focused on getting people to have colorectal cancer screenings. So one of the things that we did at our health system is I was on our CAC Cancer Action Team at St. Joseph Candler. We brought in a team from Morehouse, and what we wanted to do was to teach lay people to interact with the community, thinking that that would build some trust because these were people that they knew. So the goal was to educate the lay person to talk to folks, churches, mm-hmm. civic groups, mm-hmm. or whoever would they invite them and have them come in and talk about the problems with colorectal cancer. And then one of the things that we were seeing from a healthcare perspective was that we were seeing people that were coming in a later stage of colorectal cancer. We want to catch it early, mm-hmm. so the survival rates are significantly higher. And when we began to set this up, one of the things that we found was wasn't associated with us, but there was another research project that had been done locally. And when those researchers came in and asked, I believe it was a church, to give them some demographics and that they would give them feedback. And mm-hmm. after the study was done, mm-hmm. they got the demographics, but they never came back and gave the feedback. So that added to a level of distrust. So these people who were trying to build up trust mm-hmm. Had that reinforced by not having what was promised given to them. So it's always a focus for things that we do is to follow up. And when we say we're going to do something, do it and do it the right way. Mm-hmm. You have a patient that could come in and have a diagnosis of cancer. And if they're African-American, you say, well, we got a research drug that may give you a shot. Mm-hmm. Say there's nothing else going on, no other options. You've gone through all the chemo you can have. You're going through all the radiation. Mm-hmm. We got this drug. It looks fairly promising. Would you be willing to try this as a research drug, an experimental drug?
Okay.
There's some resistance sometimes from.
Why do you think that is?
Because there's mistrust.
I want to go back. I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to go back. You mentioned mistrust on a couple different occasions. Mm-hmm. What do you feel, or does the research say, or the experts say, why is there this distrust with this demographic?
Yeah, I think there's statistical data that will show you that no matter what your, from an African-American standpoint, no matter what your social or your economic status is, mm-hmm. there's a bias mm-hmm. when you're treated. Sometimes you may not even be offered that same level of care if you're Caucasian or, and then there's a mistrust because some people feel like that's happening, that may be happening to them. Mm-hmm. So when an opportunity comes up, they're like, is this the best drug for me? Mm-hmm. Am I going to do better? Am I not going to be better? Am I going to be another Tuskegee Institute
type of
a study person? But we've seen that mistrust go down if you're looking at age groups, our mm-hmm. younger folks, mm-hmm. they'll go for it.
Right.
Some of the older folks still have that in their minds, and there's still that level of mistrust when it comes to things that may be experimental or questionable for them in their heads.
How do you think we as a community can help turn this mindset, if you will, around? And I say that because, like I said, I have a background in grassroots mm-hmm. politics.
Right.
You know, I've worked nationally on every campaign from presidential to right. dog catcher. And so it's hard
right.
to change people's mindsets,
yeah.
especially if it's generationally ingrained, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So what if anything, can be done by us as a people, the community, to help save lives?
Yeah, I think education. Education is a absolute focal point. Giving people the education, giving them the knowledge before they go in. So if you have a good understanding of what to expect, then you're probably going to do better, and you'll probably be more apt to look at things in a different way.
Okay.
People are often afraid to say they don't know.
Right. And that makes sense. That really makes sense. Thank you for that. Okay. Moving on, my next question, mm-hmm. which I think all of us, especially in light of the climate of the world nowadays, I, for one, don't watch the news. I watch local news. But because of my career, I had to watch national and international news on a daily basis, almost on a 24-hour cycle. And that gets into your psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I had to do it as a job, it was tremendously stressful to just listen to everything that's going on. How do you think stress and anxiety is affecting people and, you know, it has a residual effects?
Right. So stress in the environment is a huge factor as far as people's health go.
Right.
When you're looking at stress levels and you're looking in communities, particularly low-income communities, you're going to find a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find stress from, you know, I'm not making enough money to pay my bills. My kid's going to a school, and the school may not be giving the kid the best opportunity to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be looking at, you want to go to the grocery store, your car broke down, there's mm-hmm. nothing close.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll find folks that are going to the local, you know, corner store to mm-hmm. get their food. And now you're getting, you know, food that's probably cost more than it should because mm-hmm. it's coming from mm-hmm. the corner store.
The food desert syndrome.
Your food desert syndrome for sure. And instead of the kid, you know, getting a bowl of oatmeal before he goes out that morning, he's mm-hmm. grabbing a Little Debbie and a soda.
Mm.
You don't feel well because your blood pressure is high.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel well because you're diabetic and you may not know where your insulin is that day. You may have missed an appointment because you've already missed 3 days of work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stressors going on. There could be, you know, just the general environment. You know, if I went home, I don't have to worry about hearing gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
Some other folks may live in a neighborhood where you hear gunshots.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you also have folks that have, you know, my cousin got shot last week and my brother died. And so there's a lot of stressors that go on mm-hmm. on people's lives, and that has a negative impact on anybody's mm-hmm. life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're stressed, you know, it changes your physiology. And when you or in an environment like that, it's not a little bit of stress. Sometimes it's constant stress. So you can only imagine what that would do to your health, not only physically, but mentally.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds a lot like PTSD.
Exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately, living in a war zone and you're not a soldier.
That is correct.
So what is your recommendation, or would you suggest as a good preventative summit for stress and anxiety?
Yeah. So I think that one of the things that we'll also find in particularly in the African American community is folks don't want to admit that they're stressed out, that they can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Black women are always focused on being the strongest person in the family,
mm-hmm.
the person that can always take it, and people will look at those ladies
mm-hmm.
to be the one that can handle whatever you put on them. So you'll find families that are focused on doing just that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Big Mama, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Aunt Susan, mm-hmm. Grandmama, mm-hmm. can take charge of it. She can handle that stress. And sometimes those folks don't deal with the stress like they should. Mm-hmm. They don't have a coping mechanism. They just deal with it and handle the issues and handle the problems. Black men are prideful, mm-hmm. and they'll take on more stress than they need to, and they don't have a decoping mechanism. And sometimes if they do have a decoping mechanism, it may not be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Some people resort to alcohol. Some people resort to drugs. But I think that if it were me, I think that there is an opportunity for people to de-stress by just talking to somebody about their stressors mm-hmm. without being judged.
Mm-hmm.
There's also times for relaxation.
Relaxation,
finding a hobby, finding something you can do that some people like to go fish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have quiet time, you have relaxing time, you're in an environment where you're by yourself, you're by a buddy, mm-hmm. you're mm-hmm. not going to be judged, mm-hmm. you can enjoy yourself. I think that meditation and yoga are things that we don't do in our community that we see as, oh, that's something odd. You know, I'm not going to do that. You're never going to find me in a downward dog.
even though it's a 3,000-year-old, 5,000-year-old practice.
That is exactly correct. Yeah. I know my wife told me she was doing a marathon a couple of months ago, and I said, a marathon? Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, so a triathlon, excuse me.
Wow.
And we went over to Hilton Head and did this triathlon. She did the triathlon. I just watched. But it was one that almost anybody could have done. So they did like a 5K run down the beach.
Gotcha.
And then they did meditation. Mm-hmm. And then the third part of the triathlon was yoga.
Yes.
So that's my kind of low stress.
Yes, yes.
Health and wellness type of an event. And I think that if we had more of those type of things happening in the lower income or any income area
mm-hmm.
with African Americans, Hispanics, and anybody else who wanted to take part of it, we'd have a lot less people that would
right.
not dealing with the stress.
I agree. I'm a champion of yoga. I do yoga every day. I start my day off with my breathing and my stretching, and it's a way of life.
Right.
And therein lies the concept of this show, the art of health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
It is an art. It is a practice.
Right.
On a daily basis. Am I perfect? No. Do I eat perfect? No. I try to.
Right.
It's a practice. It's a conscious decision. I'm going to stop here for a few seconds, and I'm just going to breathe. I'm going to let the world stay outside and be inside my breathing bubble.
Right.
Now, will that make your rent situation go away, your car payment, or the lack of a job, or the area that you live in? No, but it will help you cope
right.
a lot better.
Yeah, I think when people actually take the time to try it
mm-hmm.
and just
yes.
the experience, They will see that it is actually a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're relaxed. You feel a little different because you're in your inner spirit.
Yes.
Particularly if you do it right and if you have good instructors and mm-hmm. And a group. I like doing mm-hmm. things. Sometimes try it at home by yourself, so
right.
you know you're not going to be in a judgment zone. But if you're doing it in a group environment with the right instructors and the right environment, you're good to go.
Okay, well, that is wonderful information, and this is so wonderful. So right now, we're going to take a brief break and go to a public service announcement, and we'll be right back.
This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
A family birding event will be held on Saturday, January 18th from 10 a.m. until noon at the University of Georgia Maritime Education Center and Aquarium on Skidaway Island. Participants will learn how to use binoculars, identify different types of birds, and accompany educators on a birding hike through the maritime forest. Children ages 6 and above are welcome, but must be accompanied by an adult. More information is available by calling 912-598-3345.
How many times have you heard WRUU's corporate underwriting message? If you remember it, then your potential customers remember your message as well. We are offering this space to connect corporate and institutional partners with our loyal and active listeners. Underwriting on WRUU is short, so listeners don't tune out. It's exclusive, so your message won't be lost in advertising clutter. And it supports Savannah's only community radio station. For a marketing package to increase your reach beyond traditional media, email underwriting@wruu.org.
Okay, so we are back with Harold Oglesby with Candler Hospital here in Savannah. Mr. Oglesby, with your background and working in with COPD, any sort of breathing issues. My son was just diagnosed with sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. He is on his first tour duty over in Kosovo.
Okay.
And thank God he'll be back in a couple months. But, you know, it is something that progressed.
Mm-hmm.
I know just only a little bit about it from when my twins were first born. And my daughter was diagnosed with sleep apnea as an infant. She has since outgrown.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's weird that my son has developed it. And we were told that sleep apnea is hereditary, a bunch of different things. He now has a CPAP machine, that the newer ones, not mm-hmm. the little ugly ones that were real loud.
Right.
So as a 31-year-old male, that's good for him.
Mm-hmm.
So can you briefly kind of give us an overview over, you know, the allergies here, the COPD, the air, I don't know if you know about air quality, but kind of give us a brief overview of what
sure.
Candler handles.
No mm-hmm. problem. So I'll actually start with our pulmonary diagnostic center. And our pulmonary diagnostic center is focused around the diagnostic procedures of the lungs and dysfunctions. So we do several things in that area. One of those things that we do is we try to quantify how bad a person's lung disease is. So one of the mechanisms we use to do that is we'll do pulmonary function testing. In the pulmonary function testing, we can figure out what a person's lung capacities are, where the shortcomings may be, whether it's something restrictive or something that's obstructive. When you're talking about obstructive, you're looking at somebody maybe have COPD or chronic pulmonary obstructive disease. And we'll try to define what that is. In our diagnostics department, we'll look at those parameters. We have pulmonologists that work in our facilities. Those pulmonologists will interpret the data, design treatment plans for the patients, include medications. Then we'll also do testing for cancer. And usually when we're looking for cancer, we're looking to do things with our bronchoscopy suite.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very unique and very busy bronchoscopy suite at Candler Hospital. The bronchoscopy suite, the typical bronchoscopy suite will do about 40 to 70 bronchs, we call them bronchs, a month.
Now, what's a broncho patient?
A bronchoscopy mm-hmm. is when you take a video laryngoscope and you look into a patient's lungs using fiber optics. And mm-hmm. it's, you're taking a long, basically a camera, going mm-hmm. into the patient's lungs,
mm-hmm.
getting biopsies and getting cells to see what is in the patient's lungs. We're usually looking to see diagnosing whether they have lung cancer or if they don't.
Mm.
And our goal is always to diagnose those things as early as possible. Mm-hmm. Lung cancer is one of the deadliest cancers that is out there, so you want to diagnose it as early as possible. And our center is unique because we have diagnostic equipment that allows us to do what we call navigational bronchoscopy.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, when a physician goes in with a bronchoscope, it's a long tube with a camera on the end.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go into the lungs, and they'll find a tumor, get a sample. Well, you got a long camera that's on a tube. You can, and the lungs bifurcates into small airways, so it's hard to get out way out into the periphery where these really small nodules may be. The navigational bronchoscopy equipment allows you to get so far with the big tube until you can't go any further. Then an additional smaller apparatus will come out of the end,
mm-hmm.
and you can navigate that using a fine slice CT scans
mm-hmm.
and a navigational system that will direct the physician out to the periphery so he can get those really, really small nodules.
Mm-hmm.
He gets those really small nodules, we're able to get a sample from those, either a biopsy or we'll do what we call a bronchial wash. You'll put fluid in and collect cells.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll do in the lab itself, before the patient ever leaves, we have someone from the lab that is there, a cytology tech that will stain those samples. We have a pathologist that's in the room, have the microscope in the room, a huge screen where everybody in the room can see what cells are there. And then we'll look, and if we see just normal tissue, a lot of times the pathologist said, well, we need another sample. This isn't showing anything, and they'll get another sample and they'll look at it. So the patient is diagnosed with, if they have a lung cancer, they're diagnosed before they leave the room. So sometimes that same day, they will take that patient and send that patient over to the cancer center to develop a treatment plan for those patients. So it's a really positive for those patients in the fact that you have small nodules that are being diagnosed, early diagnosis, treatment plans that start right away, and the patients tend to have a much better outcome. In the past, when we've tried to see how effective we've been,
mm-hmm.
At one point, like I've been doing this for 30 years, at one point what we would do is put in stents in the airways, and it's more palliative.
Mm.
You would tell the patient, you know, you have a huge tumor, you know, 6 months, a year mm-hmm. from here, you're not going to be around.
What is the recovery rate of a procedure like that? Or say you find something, and is it covered by basic insurance?
So we worry about coverage later.
Okay, right. Saving the life is the first.
We worry about coverage later. We worry about saving the patient first. Recovering from the procedure itself is fairly easy. I mean, it is an invasive procedure. Mm-hmm. It's in your lungs. You're probably going to cough a little bit. You may have a little bleeding afterwards, not usually.
Mm-hmm.
But just having that diagnosis and having it early, mm-hmm. we now see patients 5-10 years out that are survived because mm-hmm. they've got early diagnostic
That's good.
Outcomes. As far as obstructive sleep apnea goes,
mm-hmm.
we do our sleep lab, monitors the patients. They come in for an overnight study. We look at all their brain waves. We look at all their airflows. We diagnose them, and we send them to a sleep physician who will start a treatment plan. A lot of times it's a CPAP device, and that's a continuous positive airway pressure, which keeps the airway open. The prevalence of sleep apnea is a lot higher than those folks that actually come into the lab and get diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see people and hear someone sleeping, and you'll know that something doesn't sound quite right.
When the breathing stops.
Right. You'll hear them. They'll snore, and you won't hear anything, and you look at them, and they look like they're not breathing because a lot of times they aren't.
They aren't.
The body likes to maintain what we call a homeostatic state. It wants to be normal. So the body will say, wait a minute, my CO2 is getting too high. I haven't breathed in a minute. And it'll kick in. The patient will start to breathe, but it's that period of time when they don't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that, most people say, well, I sleep like that. I've been sleeping like that for 15 years. The problem with that is your oxygen level will tend to decrease significantly.
Right.
And your pressures in your thoracic cavity will change. Your heart has to work a lot harder
mm-hmm.
for blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
So now the right side of the heart has to push up against something that's trying to constrict, trying to conserve blood flow. So your right side of your heart will tend to get bigger, and you don't, you see, your heart, it's hard to live without a really good functioning heart.
Right.
So it has negative impacts. Usually those happen over time, but, you know, that is something that if you get it treated early and you get control of it, you don't have those secondary side effects from having sleep apnea. As far as the respiratory piece, it's respiratory season right now.
No, look, why is it respiratory season?
Cold weather is sometimes a trigger for patients. It could be a trigger for their asthma. It can be an older person that doesn't do very well when it's cold. Some people don't have proper heating. You have patients that will come in with pneumonias. You have flu patients. You have kids that may get sick. Teacher gets sick. Teacher goes home. Family gets sick. Things tend to get passed around respiratory-wise around this time of year. It's always a busy time for us. And the change in weather.
Well, what is the best way to keep oneself healthy, the best way that we can during this sort of season?
Eat right. Sleep right. And we were talking about sleep apnea, but one of the people, one of the things that people tend not to focus on is getting enough sleep. That's more important than people think. A lot of young people tend to, you know, pride themselves on, oh, I can get away with 4 hours of sleep. I don't really need it. But you do.
You do.
You sleep for a reason. You need to get proper sleep. You know, you hear the big numbers. You need to get 8 hours worth of sleep. People say, I'll never get 8 hours of sleep. Everybody's in a rat race. You're trying to get the best of the best and trying to survive and trying to live the American dream. But, you know, if you can't enjoy it,
it turns into the American nightmare.
You can turn into the American nightmare. you can run yourself ragged. And then by the time you have, you know, the mini mansion and you have the Corvette and the Mercedes sitting in the driveway,
the next generation enjoys it.
You're gone. And so you haven't taken care of yourself. And
okay, well, this is wonderful. So I would like to go into the mentoring portion. What is the 100 Black Men?
Okay. The 100 Black Men is a national organization. It was started in 1963 in New York City. It was started by a group of gentlemen who saw some changes in their community, felt like the young people could use some guidance to perform better. So they got together. One of those people that was part of the group was the guy who became mayor of the city, Dinkins. He was part of the group. They met, they talked, they set up what they felt was a good organization that could make a difference and mentor young people to become the best that they could become. The way the name came about was when they got finished with the meeting, there was some conversation about what they should name the organization. They looked at the roster. There was exactly 100 Black men in the room, so they became the 100 Black men.
Low-hanging fruit, easy A.
Exactly. Okay. Became the 100 Black men of America.
And so you are president of the 100 Black Men for Savannah.
That I am. Now, the 100 Wonderful. Black Men of Savannah started in 1996. And it started after a group of men from Savannah went to the Million Man March. And when they came back, they were thinking of what they could do in the Savannah area to make a difference. Mr. Charles Gordon, who was the founder of the organization, had gone to an event, I believe it was in Columbia, South Carolina, where he had ran into some members of their chapter in Columbia. He talked to them. He gave him the information about how to start up in a chapter in Savannah. He went through that, gathered a group of guys. They started the 100 Black Men of Savannah. They started a mentoring group with a group of students at Haven Elementary with the goal of following those kids from elementary school through graduation, through high school graduation. And they were fairly successful with that model for a little while. So the kids started getting toward middle school. When the kids started going through middle school, they started losing their continuity. Kids were going to different schools. Kids were transferring out. And they were losing contact with a number of kids. So they changed the model, and we developed what we call the Youth Leadership Academy. The Youth Leadership Academy is a it's an academy that's held basically twice a month, like every other Saturday. And those Saturday sessions are focused on opportunities to give the kids instructions on life skills.
Mm-hmm. Such as
how to be a gentleman, mm-hmm. how to be a lady. Mm-hmm. We instruct the young men on it's not wrong to open the door for a person. Mm-hmm. It's not wrong to help a young lady be seated. Mm-hmm. And it's always an interesting class because it's you know, chivalry. Mm-hmm. And some people are not accustomed to chivalry anymore. We found that just seating a young lady in a seat was more difficult than we had planned. So you have a young man that's not sure how to do it, mm-hmm. and a young lady that's not sure how to be seated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have instructions, slide a chair right behind them, touch mm-hmm. her leg so she know mm-hmm. the chair's behind her. When she know the chair's behind you, then you sit. Not don't sit before you feel it, that sort of a thing. So those classes are always interesting. Fine dining classes, and then we have classes to help them be successful in school. Mm-hmm. So we'll have classes on how to make math fun, mm-hmm. math tips, how to take good notes. We'll have a class on Cornell note-taking. We'll have components of the classes that deal with writing. We try to make sure that by the time the kids finish the programs that when they get to the point they're filling out college scholarships and applications and it requires an essay, it's second nature.
Okay.
They do it on a continuous basis. And then we encourage the kids to be thought-provoking, thought-taking people and leadership. So they need to run a meeting.
Okay.
We teach them the rules, Robert Rules of Order, so they know how to run a meeting. They know the different components of organizations. And then we get them to function and take control and put them in this seat. Mm-hmm. You know, one of our models is what they see is what they'll be. So we try to expose the kids to different things. So we take the kids on field trips, and then we make sure that they see what they can be. If, mm-hmm. you know, if it's meeting an engineer from Gulfstream, we mm-hmm. get them to meet engineers from Gulfstream. Physicians, whatever.
So to sum it up, another model of yours, a real men giving real time,
mm-hmm.
and basically the next level of nonprofit cause driven, you're a next level nonprofit cause driven organization mm-hmm. that's globally, and you're preparing the next generation for leadership. That's a wonderful thing. So if a person wanted to get involved, get their family involved, let little Johnny participate in this, mm-hmm. does little Johnny have to go to a particular school or what?
So, no, Johnny doesn't necessarily have to go to a particular school, but they have programs that would meet probably little Johnny's needs.
Mm-hmm.
Little
Johnny's just an example.
Yeah, exactly. So right now, we have our in-school mentoring program. So our in-school mentoring program is one of the programs that touches the most young people mm-hmm. That we do in Savannah. We probably have over 700 kids that are in our in-school mentoring program. And right now, we're in 39 of the public schools in the greater Savannah area.
Mm-hmm.
And those programs, it's kind of like the Youth Leadership Academy. They meet usually biweekly. We mm-hmm. go into the schools. It's built into the curriculum. We don't interfere with any of the kids' learning.
Right.
But we give them an opportunity to interact with mentors.
Wonderful.
And like I said, we're in 39 different schools. So if little Johnny wanted to take part in that, and we were in their school, it's quick and easy. Parents can talk to the counselor.
Mm-hmm.
They can go to our website. It's www.100blackmensav.org, and they'll find the applications, and it's easy to do.
Okay.
We have several other mentoring programs that are out there, but it's fairly easy to get in. There's no particular criteria to get in,
mm-hmm.
And we don't separate the kids once we're mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a kid with a 4.0 GPA that's never been in the principal office next to a kid that has a 1.2 GPA that's always in the principal office.
Right.
But once they're in our program, they're all held to the same level expectation. We want them to be the best that they can be.
Now, I know you mentioned that you were over the health and wellness, a component for the 100 Black Men here.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other, briefly, what components are part of the health and wellness program for the 100, and are there any additional ones?
Okay. So we tend to follow the lead of our national organization. So they will put out generally an annual topic that we'll deal with. A few years ago, it was HIV awareness, HIV testing, and then follow up, making sure people were being treated. Right now, we're focusing on a couple of things. One of them is CTE, or chronic, CTE. We're looking at the traumatic brain encephalopathy, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And one of the
Is that?
Okay,
that's, way over my head.
that's you'll usually see it in football players.
Oh.
You'll see it in veterans, people that have boxers, people that have repetitive head injuries or concussions.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen in the statistics, you know, over 90% of NFL players will have some form of CTE. College football players are usually not far behind. Mm-hmm. And high school players, probably about 20% mm-hmm. will have some form of CTE. The problem with CTE is that it's hard to diagnose, and you can't diagnose it until they're dead. You have to look at somebody that's donated their brain to look at the brain tissue to see what has gone on. And we wanted to help prevent some of that. So one of the recommendations that's coming from our national health and wellness team is to prevent contact football for youth. And we're going to send out, and you'll probably see this coming out soon, a position statement coming from the 100 black men nationally promoting flag football before you get to high school.
Mm.
Once you get to high school, then we're going to promote that point. If you want to play contact, hit, knock the kids down, really rough and tough football, then you wait till you get to high school level to do full contact. But before that, we're going to promote flag football and take out the head hits. The brain doesn't do well when it's shaking.
I can only imagine.
In your skull.
So I understand that January is National Mentoring Month.
Yes, ma'am.
So what kind of fun activities do you guys have planned that people in the community can get involved in?
Right. So we tend not to do anything special for January.
Mm-hmm.
For us, mentoring.
Because you do it all year long.
Yeah, mentoring us is all year long. Every month is mentoring month for us. So we don't do anything particularly special for January for mentoring month. We feel like our chapter does more than enough every day. We're mentoring someone. Someone from our organization is mentoring someone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in Savannah, we mentor over 1,000 kids. And that's from elementary through collegiate. We have collegiate chapters at Georgia Southern Armstrong campus, Georgia Southern Statesboro campus, Savannah State. And we're unique because we're the one of the only chapters that actually has an all-female chapter. And that all-female chapter is at Georgia Southern Statesboro.
Which is wonderful.
Right.
Which is wonderful.
So our goal, we call it mentoring the 100 way across a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So we start off with the kids in elementary school. We get them to high school,
mm-hmm.
out of high school, into college, and in the college with the goal of them getting through college with the least amount of student debt possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we focus on scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on those kids performing the best that they can and being prepared to apply for scholarships and to win scholarships and to have a design of a plan for college. Once you get there, we want you to matriculate to graduation. We don't want you just to get there and have a good time and end up with student debt and still looking for a job. We want you to get through the whole process without a lot of debt and preferably no debt.
Mm-hmm.
And
also, it's each one touch one.
Right.
I keep referring to my children because they're fabulous people.
Mm-hmm.
My son is a man of tomorrow. So he graduated from the collegiate chapter in Atlanta.
Okay.
It's a exceptional organization.
Mm-hmm.
For all families, not just low-income families,
right.
but anyone who wants to raise a happy, healthy, productive
right.
child.
And that's always been one of the misconceptions, just from the name of the organization. When folks see 100 black men, they believe that we're all about low-income
mm-hmm.
black boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
far from the case.
It's not the case. Mm-hmm. We affect any youth. All of our programs are open to any youth, whether they have their both parents in the family, whether they are a 4.0 student, and they're going to be successful no matter what, or if they're in a single family home and they're living at a shelter. Mm-hmm. We're going to treat those kids the same way. Our goal, again, is to make sure that every kid has the opportunity to be the best that they can be. Mm-hmm. And we want everyone to perform at that level. And we try to give them examples of what that might look like. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of additional programs. One of them is our Courts in Session. Our Courts in Session program is one of the most successful programs that we have.
Kids, I've heard about that. That's exciting.
Right. So Judge Bass, Superior Court judge, opens up his courthouse, and we bring the kids down there on a Saturday, usually about every other, maybe once a month sometimes. So we bring those kids in there. There are probably a group of 11 lawyers that work with these kids. So you have judges, you have lawyers, you have law enforcement that will speak to these kids. And sometimes the kids are there because the parents think it's a good idea. And the students come in, and you can tell they really don't want to be there. And by the end of the day, it's a whole different story because they learn that they can express their thoughts. Mm. So when they go to Courts in Session, you're talking about things that are in the news. You're talking about cases that are out there. And what we generally have is we'll have the kids act as a lawyer. They'll be either the defender, they'll be the prosecutor, mm-hmm. or they'll be part of the jury. Mm-hmm. And they'll have to defend or prosecute things. And a lot of times we switch their roles. They ask them, what do you feel about that? And they say, well, I think that guy should go to jail because he did this and he did that. Okay, you're going to be the defense attorney. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. somebody says, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if you really did it. Okay, you're going to be under prosecution. So they switch them. So they have to take a different mindset about and look at things a little bit different. And sometimes it doesn't change what they really think about it, but mm-hmm. it gives them an opportunity to see things from different sides. And it gives them some insight into that. We've had several people that have gone through the program that have gone on to, we have a couple at Mercer, we have one at Duke, and we have others that are going to schools around the country that are focused on becoming lawyers and actively making those headway towards that. Mm-hmm. Most of them are still finishing their undergrad. Mm-hmm. But nationally, the 100 Black Men of America has an association with Drake University. And Drake University actually has an opportunity for our students who want to go to law school to go to law school for free, which you won't find that every day.
Right.
It's a limited number, but it's still an opportunity out there for our kids to progress to that point.
Okay. This has been such a pleasure chatting with you about respiratory care and mentoring. Can we just have you summarize the respiratory care and health and also the 100 Black Men and your healthcare initiative? Kind of summarize it for us, everything that we just discussed for those who may have joined late.
Sure. So, respiratory-wise, health and wellness-wise, I would tell anybody, focus on, educate yourself, focus on getting well and starting off as well as you can. And when I say well, I mean doing the right things, eating the right foods, getting the right amount of sleep, listening to what your doctor is telling you to do. Go see your doctor on a regular basis. Preventive medicine is probably going to be the best medicine. Mm-hmm. I think it's always better to stay ahead of the game than behind the game. Don't wait till you're sick to think that you need to get better. Mm-hmm. Stay ahead of the game. Try to find that place that you can find spiritually and in your mind that's going to find that peaceful place. Find that. Take care of your body. Take care of your family. And centralize yourself on being preventive. Don't be scared of leafy green vegetables. probably the more color you eat in your food, the better you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from those things that you know that are not good for you. Mm-hmm. If you go to McDonald's, don't get the extra large drink and don't get the extra large fries with a ton of salt on them. Mm-hmm. Take time to really take care of yourself. Think about preventive medicines and help the community grow by helping young people. Mm-hmm. You asked earlier about how folks can help the 100 Black Men of Savannah, and that's one thing that we always need is mentors and volunteers.
Okay. And they can get that on the website.
They can get that on the website, mm-hmm. and it's all nice and easy. We can make Savannah a great place to live.
I agree.
Even better place to live.
I agree wholeheartedly. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Oglesby. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you. And I'm definitely, if it's okay with you, want to have you back. I have a million more questions.
And we got a ton more to talk about.
We have a ton more to talk about. And like I said, thank you so much for taking time out of your very, very busy schedule to meet with us this morning. And I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us this morning. And we will be back here with The Art of Health and Wellness next week. Thanks so much.